Welcome to MTG Pro Tutor, your gathering of insights, tips, and advice from renowned players and community icons. Connect with venerated teachers to gain the knowledge you need to improve your skills. Now, here's your planar guide and personal tutor, Sean Penrod.
Hello and welcome. Happy July, everybody. How are you today? Speaking of July, today being July 1st, it's actually Canada Day. So, woohoo, way to go, Canada. Today, our guest is Pascal Maynard, who is from Canada. So that's pretty cool that we get a Canadian on Canada Day. How cool is that? But before we dive into today's episode, I want to say thank you so much to all the patrons who support the show directly. Because of you, I'm able to do really cool things like grow the show, get editing done, and I look forward to growing it even more. Being July, I will be picking a winner for June's giveaway shortly, and I will be announcing that next week. A lucky patron will be getting a Shadows Over Innistrad Fat Pack. This will be the last Shadows Over Innistrad Fat Pack that I give out because, as you all know, Eldritch Moon comes out this month in July. So, that's really exciting. If you have not been following the spoilers, oh my gosh, there's some really sweet stuff. You are more than welcome to come over to the MTG Pro Tutor Facebook group. Just go to mtgprotutor.com/Facebook group, and you can request to join there. We have a thread pinned to the top where we're posting all the spoilers and talking about them. It's really cool. There's some really sweet stuff going on. So if you haven't plugged in, feel free to come join us, and we can talk about it and just look at all the sweet stuff coming out. As they do, they're spoiling all the rares first, so there is some really, really cool stuff going on. It's looking like Eldritch Moon is carrying on the sweet flavor established by Shadows Over Innistrad. Speaking of flavor, if you love Magic lore or are interested in it, I encourage you to check out Magic Story. It was released as a bonus episode here on MTG Pro Tutor, so go back in the archives to between episodes 88 and 89. You'll see a bonus episode called Under the Silver Moon. That is me putting my heart and soul into a passion project. I got professional actors to do each and every role in the story, and we brought it to life. After getting an incredible performance out of the actors, I then went over the entire production with a sound engineer and added sound effects and music to really bring the story to life. It's an amazing project. If you haven't yet, I encourage you to go listen to it. Again, it's a bonus episode between episode 88 and 89. But if YouTube is more your thing, you can actually go to the Tolarian Community College YouTube channel and you can find it there. All that said, I'm happy to announce that I reorganized the support structure for Magic Story, and we are actually going to be getting another episode. That's right, I'm in the works right now with the actors and the director. We're coming together to record another episode, and the way that this works is I shifted the model from a per-episode support system to a per-month support system. So every month, supporters of the show will donate to the project, and based on the support that I get, I'll be able to do an episode more and more frequently. Right now, I can only do one episode every 4 months. So if you loved Magic Story and you want to hear and see more of it, go to magicthestory.com, pledge any amount you want per month. You'll get charged per month, and then when I have enough, I will make an episode. Right now, it's once every 4 months, and then we'll bump it up to once every 2 months, and then we'll bump it up to every month, and we'll keep going from there. I love Magic Story. I think it's amazing. I know that a lot of you love it as well. And if for whatever reason you were on the fence about supporting it, now's your opportunity to go take another look at it. I reorganized the reward structure as well as the milestones, and that's at magicthestory.com. If you haven't heard it yet, again, go back to the bonus episode or go to Tolarian Community College YouTube channel. Check it out. It really is incredible, if I do say so myself. I love it, and I'm super excited to offer more of it to you. Well, that's that. I'm super excited that we are here in July, the kickoff of the summer. There's so many fun and exciting things I have coming your way. Stay tuned for that. As I mentioned at the very top, we have Pascal Maynard on the show, who I'm really excited to have. He just top-aided another Grand Prix last weekend, which is super cool. He has a lot to say, a lot to share, so let's dive right in. What's up, everybody? I am super excited to have our guest with us today. Our guest was on the Canadian national team in 2010. He top 50'd his first Pro Tour, which was Worlds Chiba 2010, and made fifth in the team portion. He's played in over 15 Pro Tours and has 10 Grand Prix top 8s, including 2 wins in his record. He currently has 1 Pro Tour top 8 and is gunning for more. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome Pascal Maynard. Pascal, how are you doing today?
Great. How about you?
I'm doing great. We're so happy to have you. Are you ready to delve into your mind and share with our audience tips and tricks to take their game to the next level?
Absolutely.
Excellent. Now, all you Pro Tutor prodigies out there, if you want to connect with Pascal, the best place to do that is on Twitter. He's at Pascal Maynard. Pretty straightforward. So just look him up, say thanks for being on the show, ask him a question. He's pretty active there. I always love interacting with him there, so hit him up. So, Pascal, let's talk about you and what you have going on. Is Magic all you do? Do you have, you know, a job? Are you going to school? Like, what do you have going on?
Yeah, that's pretty much all I do, or at least everything I do touches magic. I used to work full-time in a card store, and the more and more I've been traveling, the less and less I work at the store because I just don't have the time. I work for Channel Fireball. I work for an app called Deck Drafter, so every set I review the cards for their app. So yeah, pretty much everything I do is related to magic.
That's really neat. Is the store face-to-face?
Nope. I live in Quebec City. Most people think I live in Montreal, but that's not true. I live in Quebec City, so the store I work at is called Boutique Donjon.
Oh, well, fancy. Very fancy. And then that's really neat. So you said work for Channel Fireball. You write articles for them, I'm assuming?
Yeah, and make videos.
And make videos, excellent. And then what's this app? Tell me more about that. That sounds really neat.
So it's basically an app where you can generate drafts and seals against butts. You can't really play, but you can gives you a good idea of like a seal deck or even just like draft. Because what we do, I actually do that with John Stern. So John gives a rating from 1 to 100 on a card. And then we split up like the review. So we write like a 50 character review on the card. Like, this is good for what reason? This is bad for what reason, for X reason. And then the rate that he gave it from 1 to 100 is, so the bots use this rating to pick the cards. So it's obviously like sometimes the bots like would pick like five cards, five different colors or whatever, but it usually takes the highest, the best card. So it gives you an idea of like of a sort of a real draft. And yeah, I've been doing that for like a year and a half now or something, a year and a set.
Well, that's really neat. That's cool that there's ways to practice those kinds of, you know, those kind of things on our mobile devices. And that's neat that they have, you know, someone smart like you who's behind it to make sure that it's trying to simulate as real experience as possible. So at the very least, they're not, users aren't completely blind or completely unaware when they walk into a draft, something like that. So that's awesome. Really cool. And I love how everything that you have going on, like you said, pretty much touches magic, whether it's writing or video making, working on the app, and then traveling. And that's what we want to get into, is your journey, what you have, you know, how you got where you are and stuff like that. So let's go back to the beginning. We love using stories to kind of bridge the gap between where we are and where you are. And we'd love to hear how you got into magic. What was that story of that first time that you were introduced to magic cards?
So I was living really close to a store where they sold like a bunch of gaming stuff, like Warhammer, Pokemon at the time, Yu-Gi-Oh, all the different games you could think of that existed 10 years ago, like Dungeons and Dragons and everything. I tried a bunch, and then eventually, after like a year or something, found Magic, and it was the only one I really liked because the crowd was mostly older, and for some reason I was getting along better with older people than people my age, so that's why it stuck.
What was that first set that you came in on?
It was, I started at Fifth Dawn, but then I really like understood everything like 3 months later when Champions of Kamigawa came out. Or like at least like I knew like what was a set, when sets came out, like what was an FNM, what was a PTQ, what was a Pro Tour, like 3 months after when Champions of Kamigawa came out.
That's really neat. I love how you said that you tried, you know, lots of different games. It reminds me of when I got into, you know, Magic pretty much. It was back, so my brother and I, we tried everything. So we did the Star Wars card game, and there was like a Battletech card game, and a Babylon 5 card game, and a Dune card game. So basically, they made a card game, we tried it out. I even did, for a little bit, I tried to do the Wheel of Time card game, but Magic was the one that just, you know, stuck. It has the resiliency. It's the only one of all those that are still around. And so that kind of reminds me of me when I got in, just trying all these different games, and then finally finding one and sticking to it.
So what's the last game before Magic, you said?
Wheel of Time. I mean, that was years and years and years ago. So, well, it's based on a fantasy novel or a fantasy series, and they tried to make a card game out of it. And I just liked, you know, oh, these are all the characters from the book that I like, and so, but it didn't really go anywhere. It lasted, I don't know, three sets, and that was it. So, since you came in and started playing, what's been your favorite set?
Time Spiral, or like that block at least.
And why is that?
I love it because it's like, nothing is obvious. It's so, there's like a little bit of everything. It's not like Lorwyn or like Theros. Like, there's no theme. So like, well, the theme is that everything is like weird, and like there's just a little bit of everything, and it's chaos, basically planar chaos. So it's not like obvious that you should build like this Kithkin deck or this enchantment deck or this whatever. So it's, yeah, I just like that the format back then, because it's like the first standard format that I played that I like sort of understood everything. And then there was so many options. It's like there's flashback, there's buyback, there's convoke, there's just like 25 different abilities or something. And yeah, suspend and everything. I just loved it.
Yeah, that's when I fell out for a while and then came back in for a little bit. And when I came back in, it was during Future Sight. So I remembered enough of Magic that I recognized a lot of the mechanics. And then they had all these new ones, which I thought was really fun. And, you know, they had these different card frames to kind of represent the future. And so it, for me, who had a grasp of Magic from before, it was just so fun and perfect just to kind of see where we've come from and where we might be going. And so I really like specifically the Future Sight set, because I wasn't really involved with the other sets in that block, but I think that was just a fun time for, especially in franchise players.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I totally agree. This Future Sight was especially awesome.
And along the same lines, do you have a favorite card, or at least one of your favorite cards?
I get asked this question about every 2 weeks, I think. And my answer is the first thing that comes to my mind is Tooth and Nail. It's the, so it's five colors, double green. You choose one of the two. Either you get two creatures in your deck, put them in your hand, or you put two creatures from your hand and put them into play. But you can play two extra colorless to entwine, and so you can do both. So you get two creatures from your deck, put them into play, basically. The reason, so my first deck was Affinity, because I started playing a Fifth Dawn. So like the big standard deck was Affinity, but I didn't have Arbonne Ravagers because it was too expensive. And then when I finally got them, the deck got banned like a week after.
Oh my gosh. So,
and my one of the best players at the time at the store, who is now one of our best friend, was playing Tooth and Nail, even though like Affinity was legal. And then so I'm like, oh, I'm going to start playing that deck now that Affinity is banned. And then, yeah, just like start. It was like the first deck that I started playing in like tournaments and everything. I still like love, it's still like, my kind of favorite decks to play, like just super linear. You play one spell and you win the game. Your deck is based around that card. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Love it. That's really neat. I my only experience with Tooth and Nail is in a Commander sense, like EDH. So I don't really know what it's like to play in a constructed format and just dominate. Like, I bet that must be a cool feeling.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you would just basically, I assume it's the same thing as an EDH. Like you just play ramp spells and then you cast it and you should be winning the game once it resolves.
Yeah, no kidding. That's great. So what makes Magic fun for you, Pascal? Why have you stuck around all these years, and why do you keep playing? Like, what is it that keeps you hooked?
Competitiveness. I love winning. I love understanding why I win. I love understanding why I lose. I just love, yeah, I love the tournaments. I love traveling as much. And what got me to play, like, I guess I forgot to mention that, but what really got me to like Magic is that a few weeks after I started playing, my friend gave me a link to Wizards' official website. And then when it was like the same weekend of Pro Tour LA, which was 2005 or something. And then the front page was just like the winner with his big check. So that just got me hooked. I was like, wow, I want to win that. So I'm going to play PTQs or whatever I need to qualify.
Yeah, and here you are doing well and on the way up. And so on that note, though, obviously when you first started, you know, you didn't top eight Grand Prix and Pro Tours and all that stuff. We all started somewhere. So what was an early challenge that you had in Magic that you struggled with, but that you eventually learned and overcame?
Winning, obviously. I would, compared to now, I would say that my first like 4 or 5 years, I was pretty bad. I don't think it was bad because I was not a good player, but I was bad because I never wanted to play the best deck. I just wanted to like brew my own stuff. It took me like 4 or 5 years to play an aggressive deck in a tournament. So once I did play like my first aggressive deck, or like the first time I played the Jund of the format, like, you know, like the best deck where everybody wants to like try to beat it, but nobody wants to play it. Well, the first time I played it is the first time I did well in a tournament. And then I did really well the first time I played an aggressive deck too. So I basically realized that I should stop playing what I had fun with and then instead play what's winning. And then I started winning.
Yeah. And I think that's so interesting because I feel a lot of players go through a very, you know, similar progression. And that's fine because Magic is many things to many people, and one of which is a way to express ourselves, right? And so a lot of people, they love, you know, making their own deck and putting stuff together and showing up and having fun and whatnot, and that's fine. But a lot of, especially a lot of people that I've talked to have mentioned a similar path where they had a shift where they started playing the best deck because it's the best deck for a reason. What was it that kind of made you do that shift? You're just like, oh, I'll just try it one time, or you lose a bet. Like, what was it that made you try that deck for that first time?
So the aggro deck was, we went to a GP in Philly. That was like the first time that I traveled to the US for a tournament. And it was extended. I was playing Blue Green Tron because that was like my, I like Tron decks. I like big mana decks. I like control decks. So that fit perfectly. It wasn't like a bad deck. So I guess I was kind of lucky that the deck that I liked was actually sort of good in the format. But I did day two. And then on day two, there was a PTQ. And my friend had a Zoo deck. And I'm like, well, I'm just going to try this. Let's see what happens. We deck swapped. So I landed my deck because he always played Zoo. And then he had never played nothing else, anything else. I just gave him my deck. I took his deck, played. I'm like, oh my God, it's so much easier and I'm winning way more. So I was like 5-0 in this PTQ. And then we had to leave because someone was working on Monday and then we had to drive back.
Oh my gosh.
But like, I still learned that, yeah, Zoo decks are great. Aggressive decks are great. It's so much easier. I can't tell if the amount of thinking is less, but it's certainly more streamlined. And that fits my style much more perfectly. And then the best deck is a PTQ when I think this deck was like known as arguably the best extended deck ever. It's you played Dark Depths with Vampire X-Mage, plus you played Topter Foundry and Sword of the Meek in the same deck. And there was like Chromux, Star Confident, Thirst for Knowledge, just like very good cards. And the deck actually started as like a Topter Depths where it was just, the goal was just to model to make sure you would like get your pieces and then it was just assemble a Merit Lodge, whatever it's called, 2020. And then the second evolution of the deck was to add Topter Foundry in it because the Topter Sword combo, because people would like board and remove all for your 2020 and you would just get them with a bunch of Topters. So this was known as like arguably the best extended deck ever. And I could just never beat it in testing. So I'm like, oh, whatever, I'll play it. And then I like lost my win in for Topper or something, but it just like felt so amazing to finally play the best deck because it was so much better than everything else.
Yeah. I think that's again, really interesting. And I think a lot of players should give that a try. You know, a lot of times we just want to build our own thing or whatever, but again, if you're going through serious playtesting and you want to do well, you know, at an event and you keep losing to this one particular deck, no matter what you try, then maybe the next thing to try is that deck. So thank you for sharing that. I totally agree.
I don't want to like push everyone to do that because some people just like play to have fun. And I think it's a good thing and what makes the game like survive. And it's just like, personally, I wanted to win more than everything else. Well, at least I didn't know back then, but then when I started winning, I was like, wow, that's what I like. And that pushes me to play more. So I think that was good for me, but it shouldn't be like for everyone. Otherwise, like the game might be just too competitive and not fun for people to start playing.
Right. Yeah, that's true. That's very true. Now, on your journey, as you know, you're going through and evolving and learning these different decks and styles and things about yourself, every journey is unique and we all have highs and lows, and we want to hone in on two moments in your journey. One being your worst Magic moment and what you learned from it. And then we'll go on to the high point. But first, start us off with what was that time that you struggled the most or the worst Magic moment you had and what you learned from it?
The one that comes to my mind the most is 2014, which was just like a year where I couldn't win a Magic at all. So I, for those who don't know, I was on a Pro Tour from 2010 and I never fell off until 2014. And that year I just had the most miserable Magic year. I wasn't playing less, but I couldn't like, so my last Pro Tour, like maybe end of 2014 beginning of 2014 or end of 2013 was like, Dublin, which was Pro Tour Theros, and I went 0-5 drop, and then I was not qualified for the following Pro Tour, so I like played a bunch of PTQs to try to qualify, and I played, you know, whatever, GPs and everything, all the ones that I could drive to, and my personal life wasn't going well either, so I assumed that didn't really help. So I was just like not winning at all for months and months and months. And the qualifying season, the PTQ qualifying season was there, was sealed, and it was after like with Born of the Gods. And I was just like, if you could ask most people, it was an awful sealed format. It was a reasonable draft format, but the sealed format was awful. And so I couldn't win. And then it would tilt me even more that I wouldn't win. And so I would play worse and lose more. It was just like snowballing into like, I'm never going to win again. And I was actually going to quit by the end of the year. And then I decided to book a flight to the Philippines to see one of my best friends who lives there. And then he's like one of my sort of mentor. I don't know. Like he always like told me what to do in life when it was not going well and everything. So I was just like, I'm going to go see him. And it was actually the first time I was going to like fly for something that's not Magic. And the week before leaving, I was leaving from Montreal, and then the weekend. So I was leaving on Monday, and then the weekend before there was a GP in Ottawa, which is very close to Montreal. So I'm like, well, might as well just go there because I'll be there anyway. And then I'll just like take this tournament super like relaxed, and I top eighted. So it got me back on the pro tour. The whole purpose of going to see my friend was like, obviously it still meant something, but now I knew what to do with like at least the following 3 months is like test for the following pro tour. And then I just like got back on the pro tour from then. And yeah, I got gold 2 years in a row. That's definitely the biggest like thing that happened in my Magic life, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah. And I want to bring up a few points that I pulled out and kind of talk about them. So first of all, how do you deal with that? Like you say, so you know, you start losing and then you kind of get on tilt. And then when you get on tilt, you kind of start losing more and it ends up being this like downward cycle. And for you, it was to the point where you were considering, you know, quitting. How were you able to, I guess, you know, deal with that? Was that the way that you're going to deal with it, was, you know, by kind of taking a break or leaving, or like what would you say to people who are going through that right now, who they're just like, oh my gosh, I can't seem to win? And with your knowledge now, looking back on it, what can you have us take away?
Well, I obviously don't recommend just quitting when you don't win. It's a more complicated than that. Basically, I wanted to quit because I wanted to do something else with my, like, cause I was, all I was doing is playing Magic. I like quit after high school. I didn't really go further in my education because I just wanted to play full-time Magic. And so when I fell off the pro tour, I was like, well, what's the meaning like now? What am I doing? So I was quitting. I wanted to quit so I can maybe like go back to school or just like do something else. And yeah, like maybe I would play again in the future. But so what I would do is try to think what I was doing wrong, try to fix that. I think it was just not working for me because it was like everything to me. And I couldn't just not believe that I was playing that bad. So I don't know, like I would imagine the thing to do is to think about what you're doing wrong. Yeah, that's all I can say. I'm not sure why it didn't work for me. I know. I was just on tilt and I didn't want to believe that I was playing that bad or something like that. But it's easy to like just ask your friends like to watch your games and then criticize your games and then just like, don't be mad at them, like telling you what's wrong, even though you think you're better than them. Like in that moment, like in that year where I was super bad, I was probably, even though I thought I was better than my friends, probably wasn't because of that. So I should listen to them when I'm making a bad play. You should like, if possible, rewatch your games if they're on camera or something. Watch a lot of Magic. Like that's something Owen Turtlewald said like a year ago or something. He said, well, because a lot of people think he's the best player in the world, and well, I don't completely disagree. But is one thing he said to get better, even though he thinks he's one of the best, is to choose one player he thinks is very good and just watch a bunch of videos of him. And you can actually find that on mtgcoverage.com. You can search a player, and then you find all the matches he's ever played on camera, and then you can obviously learn from that.
That's really neat. I didn't know that you can look up players on coverage and just see everything that particular player has done. That's really neat. I'll definitely link that up.
You can find decks too. You can find players or decks. So
what? Oh, that's really neat. That's really useful. That's a really good tool. The other thing I wanted to talk about real quick before we move on from here, you mentioned that, you know, things in your personal life weren't like, you know, super awesome at this time either. And so I wanted to ask, was that affecting your magic, or was the fact that you weren't doing well in magic affecting, you know, your personal life? What's the tie-in or the crossover between non-magic related things and how you perform in magic?
Yeah, well, it certainly doesn't help. I think it shouldn't affect too much, but the fact that like magic was not going well, and then that was like, I don't know, like 75% of my time spent awake. So if the other 25 also doesn't work, it's obviously not you can't just, I don't know, like, it cannot help.
Right, it's all connected. It might not have like a huge impact on how you play the game, but it's, you know, it's all connected, because if the only time that you're not playing the game things aren't going well, then you're still kind of in that negative state. So there is a little bit of a connection there. And so did your performance in magic improve independent of things going on in your personal life, or did they kind of start getting better together?
Yeah, they just started getting better together.
Interesting. Yeah, that's interesting.
Like I was, by the end, when I was going to quit, sort of, like a little before I decided to go to the Philippines to see my friend, I actually applied for a job, like, I'm not going to say it, but basically a huge job that would potentially change my life, and then I just didn't get it. So that was one of the reasons why it just wasn't going well in my personal life. And then, because I was like relying on that, I'm like, oh, well, if magic doesn't work, I'm just going to do that.
Got it. Yeah.
Fine, but it didn't work. So my backup plan was not working.
Got it. My backup plan is not working. My main plan is not working. Ah, what's going on? Yeah, got it. Okay. Interesting.
But definitely like having a good state of, outside of magic, if your life goes well, I think it can only help your magic game, because you're much more focused when you play. You don't have to think about other stuff. And it just, I mean, it's a fact, like poker players or whatever, when they work out or anything, when they exercise and they're well in their mind, they play much better, because it's easier to focus on other things after.
I completely agree. I've heard that from lots of people, and I've seen that in my own life, just taking care of yourself in, you know, like you said, the exercise, the nutrition, and just making sure that the other things are performing well. It does carry over and have an effect on how we do one thing is how we do everything, pretty much. And so that's, I totally agree. So on the flip side, on the up and up, are the highs and the proud moments. So what has been your proudest magic moment to date?
My Pro Tour top 8, I would say. I think it's pretty easy. It's my prototype.
Excellent. So what was it like getting there? Like, so what did it take to get there? And then what did it feel like when you made that top 8?
So basically what it meant to me is, because I had a bunch of GP top 8s and people knew me for that, but I felt like I was not on their level yet, or they wouldn't think I would be, because I didn't have a good Pro Tour result. And I didn't want to be just like that good GP player, because I want to be like, I want to show that I'm able to beat Pro Tour players. Not just like, I want to show that I'm able to beat professional players and not just competitive players. So getting there was hard, because if you look at my PTA results, I have like the first two that I played where I top 15, or sorry, the first one and the third one I top 15, and then like the 12 other ones I didn't cash. So there was a reason people would think that, right, that I'm not able to beat professional players, because I couldn't blame them because I had to. I didn't have the results. But yeah, getting there, I would say mostly on the back of Modern. I'm usually good at Magic when I can play a deck that I know enough. When I know a field enough, and I know the deck enough. So Modern is like exactly the Pro Tour format where I could perform. And actually, like all my good Pro Tour results were either in Extended or Modern. I'm not very good at Standard. And because of that, because the Pro Tour formats are always super new, so you often play against decks you've never played before, and so your deck is not adapted to it, or your play style is not adapted to it at all. So yeah, I would say Modern is the reason I got there, and now working on Standard to hopefully get another top 8, since all the Pro Tours are Standard now.
So through your journey, you know, we talked about your early challenges and some lows, and then your high moments and things like that. What has been the deepest thing you've learned about yourself from playing Magic?
I learned a lot. I've been playing more than half my life now. So I learned that I like anything that's competitive, that's for sure. I don't like doing anything that doesn't make me learn anything. it made me much more organized as a person, because I had to travel alone, like, or just plan my trips alone for a long time when I was young, basically. Yes, I'm still young. And I assume there's a bunch of other ones, but those are the first that come up.
Those are the big ones that come up, that you enjoy the competitiveness, you like learning, or at least you don't like doing things where you're not learning, and it made you more organized. I think those are some really good takeaways that you've taken away from the game. That's great. Now, as you've played all these games, you've played, you know, thousands of games and just seen so much and learned so much and grown so much, we want to tap into that knowledge, and we want to ask, what is the biggest mistake that you see players make, and then how can we avoid that mistake?
I would say is to care too much about what's around them. Like, so I see players that are pretty good at, like, ABC Magic. Like, they know exactly how their deck works and then how to play a game of Magic. Let's say, like, I like to say ABC because, like, they wouldn't think, like, some weird ways to win the game, that, like, bluffing something or, like, reading their opponent's hand or whatever, but they can play, like, a regular good Magic game. And these players often, like, play too fast. So, like, they care a lot about their, what people think of them when they play. Like, oh, if he thinks, it probably means he's, like, not very good because he doesn't know exactly what to do, whatever. But in reality, like, if you're good and you think, like, you should come up with the right line, like, 99% of the time. So that's because I'm saying that because I have a lot of friends that are like that, or at least acquaintance that do that. And I'm like, dude, just take the time to think. Like, nobody cares. Like, you shouldn't care about what your opponent thinks of you, whatever. Just beat him. And yeah, so that's the first thing that comes up to my mind.
I like that. That's really interesting. Like you said, they play too fast because they don't want people to think that they don't know or something like that. And I know that when I first started coming in seriously to Magic, I kind of fell into the same thing. Or for me, it was, I didn't want to ask questions, you know, like I didn't want to ask, well, what does that do? Or ask a judge for interaction, or cause I didn't want somebody to think, oh, like, he doesn't know what he's doing, you know? But in reality, that's how you learn. You know, you have to go out there, you take that, slow down, take the time to think, ask a question, call a judge. Like, those, that's how you learn. That's how you progress. That's how you're going to get better. So if you want to get better, then you need to do those things to kind of step out your comfort zone and do that, because otherwise you're just going to keep getting beat. And then people will think that you're a bad player because you're not winning, you know? So you have to take the time to think things through and ask questions and learn. So I think that's really great. Now, turning that lens inward, what are some of your shortcomings? What's something that you're working on in yourself to get better at Magic?
Like, actually, what I said about watching, like, the coverage and choose, like, a player and just watch him is something that I think I don't do enough, even though I tell everyone to do it. So I want to do that. I wish, like, someone that I think is better than me could just, yeah, watch me and tell me what's wrong with my plays. I'm playing a lot more Magic online in the last, like, 2 years, mostly because of my videos and Chamba Fireball. I have to use Magic Online, and I was really bad at it because it's so much different. It was easy for me to be distracted when I play, and then so my videos would be like, well, I would play worse in my videos, so I'm trying to get better so people don't think I'm horrible. So yeah, I've been playing a lot more Magic Online than I was before, and certainly helped, because you can actually watch your games when you're not sure if you played wrong, whatever, you can just replay it. That helps. As I said, I really want to get better at Standard. I don't think it has something to do with the format Standard. It's mostly because most of the tournaments are, well, the Pro Tours are the first few weeks of a new set. And so it makes it really hard to know exactly what you're going to play against or have a tuned deck. So yeah, I need to understand better new formats, new Standard formats. Yeah, that also, like, the fact that there's much less limited GPs nowadays, there's, like, only one the week before every Pro Tour, kind of tilts me, because limited is the format I succeeded the most in. So now I have to adjust to, like, new Magic era of less limited, more constructed.
Got it. Yeah. So many, a challenge for everybody, you know, like, everybody has their strengths and weaknesses. And that's neat that you at least have identified some of the things that you can work on, because that's, you know, now you have a roadmap and a path that you can go on. And to kind of round out the section on, you know, on you and learning about what you have going on, how many pro points do you have right now?
41.
Excellent, excellent. So gold is 50, right?
Gold is 33 and platinum is 50.
Platinum is 50. So how are you going to get there by the end of the season? You going to make it?
I hope so. I'm trying to. So basically I'm capped on GP slots right now.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Which means I need to get three or more at a GP for it to matter. So it's obviously not easy, but so currently the status would be that I have two, potentially three GPs left before the end of the season and one Pro Tour. If I go X5 or better at the PT, I would be platinum right now, but I'm trying to get three extra points at GP so I can get the 44, which means I only need six at the PT, which is X and six. So yeah, I'm trying to make my path at the Pro Tour easier by collecting a few GP points.
Absolutely.
Either way, I'm going to need like an average to strong result at the Pro Tour to make flat.
Do you have 41 points? Is that including the 3 points you're going to get just for going to the PT?
No, it doesn't include it.
So you have 44 after you go to the Pro Tour. Yeah. Okay, cool. Very cool. And for those who don't know, so every season you can take your six best Grand Prix results. And so that's what we're talking about here. And so Pascal, you've already gone to six Pro Tour or Grand Prix and you have points there. And so you need to do better than one of those previous six in order to replace the points that you got there. Is that right?
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. And so then in addition to that, when you go to the Pro Tour, you get an automatic 3 points plus however well you do at the Pro Tour. And so to round out those last 9 points, you have the three just for going, and then you have to get six more. So, well, best of luck. I love seeing, you know, past guests go on and do great things. And so definitely be rooting for you and seeing how you do. And you have a couple more Grand Prix and a Pro Tour coming up. So best of luck. That's going to be so fun to watch.
Thank you very much.
So moving on to kind of like gameplay and things like that. You just mentioned that you loved limited, and that's, would you say that was your best or your favorite format?
Yeah, definitely. The fact that I don't have to choose a deck like weeks in advance just takes off so much stress. Yeah, I think I'm just like naturally good at knowing what's good in limited or not. Like I'm pretty good at just like discovering how a limited format should be played or drafted or built. Yeah, and I just love it. It covers so many angles of the game. I love it.
And so when it comes to limited, what would you say to a brand new limited player? So someone that, you know, they're diving into a format for the first time, or maybe they're, you know, newish to Magic. What's one thing, and you can choose whether it's draft or sealed, whichever one you pick, but what's one thing that a brand new player should focus on when they approach limited?
I think one of the most common mistake is people don't evaluate like if they should be aggressive or not. So basically aggressive or defensive, because I'm sure when you build your deck, like, you know, it's going to be an aggressive or defensive deck, but it's the difference between an aggressive and a defensive deck can be pretty small. And then once you have an opponent in front of you, depending on what they're doing, you should be switching more often to defensive or aggressive. And yeah, that's definitely something people don't do enough, mostly when they sideboard. Like it's really easy to just board out like your 3-1, like, I don't know, you're two super aggressive card and then board in like two good blockers, and then your deck just suddenly like becomes, you look at it and you're like, wow, okay, I just changed two cards and it just became defensive deck. And that's how you can beat someone. Like if your opponent's playing aggressive deck, you also have an aggressive deck. Well, you're boarding in, you're like 2-4-4-4, you're 2-2-4-4-4, board out two of your two drops, and then there you go. You just have like a deck that's really good against your opponent.
What are you looking for, like maybe in game one, to help you determine whether that's, you know, a good sideboard decision or not? Like how do you get to that point? What are you looking for?
Well, this requires you have to play with the format, obviously. Like, you know, like these two colors, you could have these cards, these cards, these cards. So even though you haven't seen all the cards in their deck, you can think of how it should technically play out, what their deck is built to do. And then once you know that, then you can board into just a plan that beats what they're trying to do. So yeah, sideboard cards is something that people underestimate, but I think are extremely useful. I think I sideboard more than most people do in limited. Yeah, so that's that.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I struggle getting to that point with knowing how in limited their deck should be built. You know, I'm still just worried about like, oh, like, you know, what are my cards and the optimal build for me and stuff like that. And so then I'll make my sideboarding decisions based off of what I see, but not necessarily off of what I didn't see or what, you know, I, you know, they should have based on what I did see and stuff like that. So
right. this makes me think of one thing, actually. Like, a good example is, like, if your opponent, game one, I don't know, plays, like, Plains, Mountain, like, a few, like, a good 2-drop, a good 3-drop, and then plays, like, a Swamp later, and then plays a card he splashed, and then you lose because, like, he ran you over with, like, a good 2-drop, a good 3-drop, a good 4-drop, and then, like, a removal he splashed or something. Most people would think that your opponent is playing an aggressive deck and would, like, try to board in into blockers, but in reality, like, you should know, okay, I guess red-white was not a good example because it's usually aggressive decks and limited. Let's say green-black. So in most formats, like green-black would be mostly a mid-range to slow deck. And then because it's splashing, it also means like your opponent shouldn't be playing aggressive deck and splashing. Black-green is a very odd color to be aggressive. So it just happened that in this game, he drew an aggressive hand. But your average black-green player, or at least like even him, like his average draw shouldn't be aggressive. So you should not be result oriented and like try to board in the defensive cards because he did that. Instead, you should just assume that you've never played against this guy. All you know is that he's playing black green splash of color, and more often than not, this means that he's playing a slow deck. So you should board into that again. And then obviously, like if it happens again, well, you could have been wrong. Like maybe he's actually like, one time out of 10, he's playing an aggressive deck, but you should always play like with what's the most likely to happen instead of what happened in one game.
So the best way to get to this point where you kind of understand the archetypes and stuff like that is obviously by playing limited. Like you want to get out there, you want to be involved in the limited format because as you have to start somewhere, right? So let's say you start now and you start drafting, playing sealed and things like that. And then when the next set rolls around, you can kind of take that knowledge with you to that next set and so forth and so on. But how do we get started? What would you say to somebody who is just getting started? All right, what resources are out there? Where would you point them so that people can start to understand what different archetypes are and, you know, what they do and what they should look for? Again, understanding that the best way to really familiarize yourself is to play. So get in there and start playing. But where can people start as far as resources go?
I really like Neil Oliver's article on Channel Fireball. So every set, well, he's a very good limited player. He plays a lot, and he understands really well the formats pretty quickly. So at every set, he would make some reviews and then explain which, like all the combination of colors possible in the set, and then tell you like what this color should be doing. And then a little later in the, like a few weeks after the Pro Tour, after he actually drafted a lot, he would like make other articles and like specific on each archetype. I'm not sure if he actually does all of them, but if you watch his videos, you'll see a bunch. And then if you just read his articles, you'll also find a bunch. Maybe not all of them, but that's the first thing I would look at.
Does he show like which cards are kind of key in each archetype?
Yes. Yeah, he does that.
Okay. Yeah, and that's perfect. That's a great place to start. Again, the best thing to do is actually play, but you need to start somewhere, and that sounds like a perfect resource to go and kind of see as it's evolving and what cards are key, and just kind of, and then when you go and put it into practice yourself, you can be like, okay, yeah, so now I understand why this is good and not good, and so that's great. We'll definitely link up to that. So kind of moving on, to playing and play testing, how do you get the most out of your play testing sessions? Because as you're going off to Grand Prix and PPTQs and Pro Tours especially, there's a lot of preparation and practice that goes into it. What do you do, Pascal, to get the most, to have the most effective, you know, play testing sessions?
It's a good question because it depends on the format, I would say. For example, for Modern, when I would test for GPs, for example, I think it's actually really hard to just like take one of your friend and then jam a bunch of games against, like, let's say you want to play Tron and then you want to test a bunch of matchups. Well, you're like, okay, X friend, please play like Zoo against me, whatever. And then you play some games and you're like, okay, well, okay, I need to fix that. So you've changed a few cards and you're like, okay, now it beats Zoo. And then you would take this other deck, play against, and then change a few cards. I think it's really easy to be too inbred. First, because there's way too many decks in Modern. So you should never like focus exactly on one, except like it's like overly played like Eldrazi was. So it's really easy to be inbred. And also there's so many lists, like Zoo. If you take Zoo, there's not one like 75 that everyone plays the same list. It's going to be like 60 same card, but a different 10 different cards makes a huge difference. And then let's say you put like Pyroclasm in your sideboard or whatever, and then you're playing a bigger version of Zoo, it's going to be bad. So it might just skew your testing. So to test Modern, I like to test on Magic Online, because you play against a wider variety of decks and a wider variety of lists, players, play styles. And I think it's, if you don't want to play Magic Online because you don't have access to it or you don't have the cards, you can still do the same, but I suggest you play like local tournaments with like 20 people or whatever. Just don't play with your one friend and play one list, basically. Yeah, I think it's a bad idea. But for a standard, for example, in undiscovered formats, when I test for PTs, well, it really depends on the team. I've been on Team East West Bowl the last 4 Pro Tours, and we mostly test online. So we throw a bunch of ideas at the beginning of the set, and then after that, we test. We use Cockatrice, because obviously the set is not out of Magic Online until a week before the Pro Tour, so we just can't afford to wait up until then. So we test on Cockatrice, which is a free program where you can just jam games, basically. So we do that to get it. So the first week, we just get a feel of all the new cards. We try to see what is playable, what is not. We don't really try to build exact decks, because like we don't know what rule to play, because we don't know what the format will look like. We just want to have a feel for the new cards, see which one are good, which one are bad, which one are worth building around, which one are not. And after that, like the second week, we then try to narrow down, like, well, if we found out that, let's say, like, for example, the last person, we're like, okay, Avacyn is obviously really good. So we're going to try to build Avacyn decks, try to find what's the best Avacyn deck. And then we would do that for every card that are like super powerful. We just like to find the best builds for each of those cards. And then once we start getting Gauntlet, that's when we actually start building decks that are aimed at beating a certain metagame. I'm not sure it's the best approach yet. We're very new as a team, but our results are not bad. So we'll continue doing that until we're proved wrong.
Nice. So yeah, like you said, you're new as a team, so you just might be onto something. I like it. So kind of moving in here to the home stretch, Pascal, we want to wrap things up with, are there any non-Magic related activities that you do that you feel helps you get better at Magic?
I try to exercise. I try to. It's hard for me to find the time. I guess I could make an effort. I like going to the gym. I just like doing sports, but I just can rarely find the time to do it. I go out a lot, see friends. I like to see friends. I don't play Magic sometimes, just to like not talk about that for a few hours sometimes.
Okay, very cool. And do you feel that your beard has a direct impact on your ability, like on your success as a Magic player? Because it's a really nice beard, and I think that the better the beard, the better the player.
I just started this on January 1st, actually. I just like, it was an experience. I want to see how far it can grow. But then I topped it at Pro Tour with it, so.
That's my point, exactly. You grew out the beard and you started doing well, so.
I'm going to keep it.
Well, thanks so much, Pascal. Once again, all you prodigies out there, if you want to connect with Pascal, the best place to do that is on Twitter. He's at Pascal Maynard. So just reach out to him, say thanks for coming on, ask him questions. He obviously knows a lot and is willing to talk. So to wrap things up, Pascal, what is one last parting piece of guidance you have for us? Either something you've already said that you want to emphasize or something new that you want to leave with us here at the end?
Not really. I think I went through everything in detail.
Well, Pascal, I want to acknowledge you for your contributions to Multiverse. Thank you so much for your time and for sharing your expertise with us. You are a hero among planeswalkers, and it has been a blast chatting with you. May you always draw what you need and depart every plane victorious.
Thanks. Thanks, Sean, for having me.
Thank you, Pascal, so much for coming on to the show. It was a treat having you with us, and happy Canada Day, buddy. That is fantastic that we got to put out an episode on Canada Day. That is sweet. As always, prodigies, you can find these show notes at mtgprotudo.com/Pascal Maynard. There will be a synopsis of what we talked about today, as well as any links mentioned in the show. And to close up, I do want to remind you, if you are interested in Magic lore or want to get into Magic lore,
Don't have time to read the stories each and every week on Uncharted Realms? Well, there is an audio experience like never before called Magic Story. It's a bonus episode I released back between episode 88 and 89. Feel free to go check it out. If you want to watch it, go to the Telerian Community College YouTube channel and look up Silver Moon or Magic Story there. You'll be able to find it and experience both the audio as well as the incredible visuals that the professor added to that show. And then after you're blown away by the amazing actors and the quality of the presentation, you can head on over to magicthestory.com and support that project directly. It's set up as a monthly support system, and right now I can do one episode every 4 months, but as more support rolls in, we will bump that up to one story every 2 months, and then one story every month, and so forth and so on, until Magic Story is a regular part of the Magic the Gathering community, to where we all will be able to enjoy the lore of Magic the Gathering through a high-quality, immersive experience like never before. Well, that's it for today. Thank you so much for tuning in. I love that you're here. I love doing this with you and for you, and I just can't wait to see where we go and what we do. Magic is the best game in the world, and we've heard it time and again, and I agree, partially because of the community. We have amazing players, just so many awesome people all over the world who play this game, and I'm truly blessed and happy to be a part of this amazing community. Thank you so much for all you do. Good luck this weekend if you're playing any Magic. I look forward to hopping in your earballs again next week. Until then, I'm Sean of the Gathering, and we'll see you in the next cast.
This round of MTG Pro Tutor is over. So you don't miss a single episode of MTG Mastery, be sure to subscribe to the show on your preferred podcast listening service for more exclusive interviews, deck building tips, and elite content. Or visit mtgprotutor.com to stream it straight from the source. We look forward to helping you think and play like a pro.